Libya draws nearer to civil war.
How far from the Middle East can government protests spread?
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. It's Wednesday, February 23rd. Thanks for joining us at Marketplace.org. Coming up, will Congress be able to avoid a government shutdown? Probably. But what happens after that? Greek workers are back on strike and on the streets of Athens.
And for one restaurant in Seattle, if you're a TSA agent, no lunch for you. Those stories are straight ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
What does Tier 1 capital have in common with a wedding cake? Visit the Marketplace whiteboard to find out. Our videos demystify finance and economics. Just go to our website, marketplace.org.
We start this morning with the international community gathering wind against Libya. French President Nicolas Sarkozy has called for sanctions against that country after the Libyan government's violent crackdown against demonstrations there.
The U.S. State Department, meanwhile, is evacuating American citizens. Peter Thomas is a British teacher who's lived in Tripoli for the last 2 years. He managed to escape yesterday, and he joins us now from Ankara, Turkey. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. So first, tell us how you got out of Tripoli.
We got out on one of the scheduled Turkish Airlines flights. We took back roads to the airport because Gaddafi's Republican Guard, they're out of uniform and manning checkpoints, and they're not people you want to have long conversations with. The situation at the airport was a lot worse than we had expected. There were between 5,000 and 7,000 people outside the airport, didn't have tickets, were just waiting and hoping to find a way out.
Peter, in each one of the countries that's been in the spotlight for the last few weeks, it seems like in the days leading up to whatever ends up happening, the economy just stops functioning. Give us a sense of what was going on in the last few days. Was anything open?
A lot of the sorts of closed shops, things like that, they all shut down very quickly. But food shops have remained open during the daytime. Petrol stations, they are running out. I was at the airport with a Canadian gentleman who's a Shell geologist, and he said that all the oil sites had been closing up operations, sealing off the wellheads.
Finally, just give us a sense of what people are thinking about the future of the country. Do they think that Gaddafi's about to go?
In Tripoli, people are very unwilling to talk. The strangest experience for me, it's amazing to go through a nine-hour day teaching maybe 50 students and not one of them making a single reference to what was happening on the streets outside.
Peter Thomas, who has just evacuated from Tripoli, he is joining us from Ankara, Turkey. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much as well.
Well, over the past month, the unrest has spread across the Middle East and North Africa. There are concerns the wave of demonstrations of people rising up against their governments could ignite in other nations. Jeremy Greenstock is a former British ambassador to the United Nations. He spoke today to the BBC.
This is a very big question of the legitimacy of governments and the response of ordinary people to the way that they're governed. And we're going to see this have consequences for a large number of countries around the world.
How far can those consequences be felt? Well, right now in China, the government is reportedly detaining activists and has ramped up censorship on an already censored internet. Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz is with us from Shanghai with more. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, Steve.
So what are the chances this revolution could reach China?
Well, I think most people in the know would say slim to none. Some of the conditions that underlay what's happened in Tunisia and Egypt and Libya and elsewhere do exist in China. Income inequality, education inequality, abuse of government power. But there's something that China has that these other countries don't have, and that's a thriving economy. Mm. I spoke with William McCahill at Pacific Epoch Group.
There are hundreds of millions of stakeholders. And there are very, very few people who are willing to jeopardize what they've taken from that new economy.
And it should be noted that the global ramifications of an upheaval in China would be much more severe than a slight rise in oil prices, which is what everyone's concerned about from the protests in Libya. Mm.
So if nobody in China, Rob, is going to revolt, then why is the government there rounding up people? And also we have reports that they're censoring the internet.
Yeah, ever since the Tiananmen Square protests of 1989, China's central government has taken any potential threat, no matter how small, very seriously. This past weekend, a couple hundred people showed up in central Beijing after a rumor spread online that there'd be protests in a dozen Chinese cities. Instead of a protest, there were just a bunch of gawkers taking pictures of each other with their cell phones and not really doing anything. And that's about as serious a protest as China's government would like to see.
All right, Marketplace China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Rob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, the situation in Libya is having an effect on arms sales to the region. There's a report out of Libya today that a military crew refused to bomb the city of Benghazi and instead parachuted out of an aircraft and let the military plane crash. That plane came from Russia. But a lot of armaments in other countries have come from the United States. And the White House is launching a review of military assistance and arms sales in light of the protests. Marketplace's Janet Babin joins us now with the details. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Jeremy.
All right, so we know the arms industry is a big business. Give us a sense of the size.
Well, six Gulf nations, including Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, and Jordan, are expected to spend $70 billion on defense this year, and the U.S. will get some of that. And the Wall Street Journal reports this morning that number, that figure is expected to rise to $80 billion by 2015.
And now we're talking about a White House review of some of the business that has to do with the United States.
That's right. The paper reports that before all this unrest, the Obama administration strategy was to sell arms to Arab allies in an effort to isolate Iran, right? But that strategy can backfire if you're not sure who's in charge in some of these places. And these concerns stretch to Europe as well. Prime Minister David Cameron happens to be in the region this week.
Right.
He brought with him a group of eight UK defense industry officials. Roy Isbister is with Safer World. That's a UK advocacy group.
There seems to be no thought to scaling back on the interest that's been shown in this.
So Isbister says there's a huge arms sales expo that's still going on in Abu Dhabi this week, and that's where Cameron and the industry officials are headed. So it looks like the UK at least still hopes to sell £5 billion. That's about $8.1 billion worth of arms to Middle East allies this year.
All right. Marketplace's Janet Babin. Thanks, Janet.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Now let's get to budget negotiations going on here in this country in Washington. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says he's going to bring a bill to the floor of the Senate next week that'll keep the government running for a month after the current funding bill expires next Friday. House Speaker John Boehner says he's open to a short-term bill as long as it cuts some spending.
As for what happens beyond any short-term extension, well, let's bring in Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, for that part of the story. He joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what happens to the economy if they aren't able to come to an agreement and we get a government shutdown?
Well, that would be bad. It would, of course, affect all the people who wouldn't go to work. It could affect people who rely on government checks. And perhaps most importantly of all, the longer it goes on, it would begin to undermine very fragile confidence. And confidence is key to this economy.
What if there are spending cuts instead and they are able to avoid a shutdown? What would that do to our economic recovery?
Well, it would be a wait near term. The betting is that we'll see cuts somewhere close to $25-30 billion that would take effect beginning in the second quarter of this year. And that could shave growth by as much as a percentage point. So it would weigh on growth. It would have longer lasting effects, but near term it would be a negative.
All right. Finally, Marco, what do you think is going to happen here?
I think they're going to come to terms. I think they'll figure out a way to split the difference. The House Republicans want to cut $60 billion from spending in the current fiscal year. I think we'll get $25 or $30 billion, and I think we'll find some happy resolution here. There really is no reason politically why we should see a shutdown. I just don't think either party wants to go down that path.
Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
The Mortgage Bankers Association today said more people applied for home loans last week. Retailers continue to report positive numbers. Macy's said fourth quarter profit was up 50%. And so are some prices. It says it's going to try to offset higher costs. Home improvement store Lowe's said profit in its last 3 months was up, and discounter TJ Maxx said earnings fell a little bit.
And Steve, a very interesting number today about retirement plans. The largest provider of 401k retirement plans says people's accounts hit a 10-year high at the end of last year, Fidelity says the average account balance jumped to $71,500, up about 11% from the year before. So let's hope that people did not withdraw all of their retirement savings after the crash a few years ago.
And for more numbers, stocks, and a lot of other numbers, check out this section at the website, The Numbers at Marketplace.org. You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, February 23rd. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. Now more of the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world.
Think of this as Wisconsin, with less violence, better weather, and olives. In Greece today, state workers are on strike, protesting budget cuts to their pensions and benefits. And Joanna Kakissis reports from Athens. Now, there's a bit of friction between which workers are picketing.
School teachers and hospital workers were demonstrating again. But in this strike, some low-paid government employees on short-term contracts were speaking out against overpaid civil servants with lifetime jobs. A group of archaeologists were in the middle of the crowd, holding up banners that say the government is behaving in an uncivilized way. Athanasios Stathis is an underwater archaeologist.
Almost all of the jobs are not permanent. They use us for 3 or 2 months or 6 months. Or 8 months the most, and they fire us.
Is that what's happened to a lot of your colleagues?
Yes, a lot of them. With children, they are married, they have needs, but still they are unemployed.
As always seems to happen in Greece, young people in hoods and masks broke out of the mostly peaceful crowd and fought with police. The deep cuts in public spending and benefits have sent the country deeper into recession, but have also trimmed the government debt and kept Greece from going bankrupt. In Athens, I'm Joanna Kakissis for Marketplace.
A judge has cleared British bank Barclays for its purchase of bankrupt pieces of Lehman Brothers. Barclays bought those pieces after Lehman failed and helped trigger the financial crisis. Lawyers claimed Barclays had hurried the deal through to rip off billions of dollars in profit. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
Barclays has won a major victory. Far from ripping off Lehman's, a New York judge has ruled, Barclays helped save the day. The case goes back to the height of the credit crisis. Lehman's filed for bankruptcy. Its staff and clients began to jump ship. But within days, Barclays had snapped up much of Lehman's U.S. operations for a song. By doing so, said the U.S. judge, Barclays helped avert an even greater calamity and save thousands of jobs. His ruling is a relief and a vindication for Barclays. But Chris Hughes of the financial website Breaking Views says that in the longer term, the Lehman takeover may not look like such a great deal for Barclays.
Whether the enlarged company with this massive presence in these pretty volatile businesses is really something that suits investors' tastes in the post-crisis world, I think that the jury's still out on that.
A spokesman for Barclays welcomed the U.S. court ruling. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Danish global container shipping company Maersk said today it made a little money after posting losses last year. That report just a couple of days after the company said it was buying at least 10 of the biggest container ships on the market. That may mean the global economy is finally above water. Here's Marketplace's David Gura.
The bulk of what we buy abroad comes by sea.
Just massive ships, multiple football field-sized ships.
Kevin Sterling is with BB&T Capital Markets. He says that during the recession, demand for shipping dropped, and so did prices. Now the economy is turning around, but an anchor is still weighing the shipping industry down.
If you kind of dig further in, demand's actually pretty good. It's just the ship supply is overwhelming the situation.
Sterling says when the economy was hot, lots of companies decided to expand their fleets. But it takes a long time to build container ships, and makers started delivering them just as the economy soured. Shipping companies couldn't afford them, so they tried to push delivery dates back.
The new delivery schedule is overwhelming and, in fact, pretty daunting.
Maersk was cautious. It didn't order as many vessels as its competitors. Instead, it refurbished its own fleet. Now, Maersk is ready for its ships to come in. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Back in this country to Memphis, Tennessee, Steve, an all-pizza diet turned out to be a lifesaver for 82-year-old Jean Wilson. She orders a large Domino's pepperoni pizza every single day. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, you and me both.
But for 3 days, Domino's hadn't heard from her. Ooh. So the delivery person decided to go check on her.
Oh.
Well, it turns out it was a good thing she did because Wilson had fallen and couldn't get to a phone. The police eventually came. They broke down the door. They brought her to the hospital. She is okay. And Domino's is sending its hero delivery person, Susan Guy, on an all-expense-paid vacation. I hope she also gets a lifetime supply of free pizza. You are listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, February 23rd in New York. I'm Jeremy Hobson, and on Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis, also known as Radio Chio on Twitter. In Texas, lawmakers are wrestling with a multi-billion dollar big budget deficit, much like Wisconsin and Ohio, where state employees are battling to keep their collective bargaining benefits. But unlike those other states, Texas has the luxury of a $9 billion rainy day fund. As Ben Philpott reports from Station KUT in Austin, even with a big budget deficit, some lawmakers don't want to touch that money.
Just about everyone admits it's raining in Texas. Falling tax revenue and stagnant home prices have left a hole of as much as $27 billion in the state's budget. But is it a downpour or just a little drizzle? The state's Republican governor, Rick Perry, says there's no need for an umbrella. He's pushing for budget cuts instead of opening the piggy bank.
Emptying the savings account to pay for recurring expenses is a bad idea, whether it happens at home, the workforce, or with our state budget. Therefore, we must protect the rainy day fund.
But Democratic State Representative Garnett Coleman sees hurricane warnings.
Well, first of all, I think we ought to spend all of it.
He points to proposed cuts in public education that could mean laying off tens of thousands of teachers. And don't get him started on health care cuts. He knows the tax increases being passed in other states to make ends meet aren't going to fly in Texas.
The reason other people are raising taxes is because they don't have $9 billion sitting in an account that can be used readily.
But this isn't a debate just confined to politicians. Bill Hammond heads up the Texas Association of Business. It's considered the most powerful business lobby in the state. He says tax increases are job killers. But at the same time, the proposed cuts in K-12 and higher education don't promote the skilled workforce Texas businesses need.
We think if we're going to hold the school districts and the administration accountable for their performance on the new end-of-course exams and on accountability in general, we need to provide them with the materials as well to do their job.
On the bright side for Texas, at least the state can afford to have this debate. A recent report by the National Association of State Budget Officers shows 15 states started the year with no money in their rainy day funds. In Austin, I'm Ben Philpott for Marketplace.
Being called Pontiac these days means you're driving down a rough road. The American car brand no longer exists, and the city it's named after, Pontiac, Michigan, is going through some tough times. Unemployment is 3 times the national rate. The number of people working at the local GM plant is now at an all-time low, about a fifth of what it once was. But city leaders say they're hoping to get more people back to Pontiac with incentives for businesses to open up downtown. Sarah Hewlett of Michigan Radio reports.
Stephanie White does hair for a living. For the past 7 years, she did cuts, perms, and weaves at a salon she started in a more affluent neighborhood next door to Pontiac. But shortly after Thanksgiving, she moved into an 1,100-square-foot space on Pontiac's downtown business strip.
It has changed a lot, but I think it's coming back.
White grew up in Pontiac. She decided to relocate to her hometown after hearing about a program called Rise of the Phoenix. She signed a 3-year lease, and the first 12 months are rent-free.
That means that I can build not only my salon, my clientele, and I'm looking for some workers to make it a nice experience downtown Pontiac.
The idea for free rent was the brainchild of a committee with the Downtown Development Authority. Phil Wojtowicz is a commercial real estate broker who sits on that committee. He says it polled the downtown building owners and asked how many thought they'd have tenants in the next 24 months.
And, you know, everybody said not likely. And we said we have to do something to be either innovative or aggressive. We had to think outside of the box.
Wojtowicz says several building owners signed on to the plan and more came on board after seeing tenants move into empty buildings. To get into the program, business owners have to commit to a 2 or 3 year lease. And Wojtowicz says they have to move in by the end of March.
In the spring of this year, there's going to be a lot of foot traffic in downtown Pyke that otherwise wouldn't have been there.
That would be good news for hair salon owner Stephanie White. The Pontiac native says she looks forward to having a downtown that looks more like the one she grew up with.
Like maybe have a coffee shop down here. And also somewhere where we can shop for clothing and other things as well.
So far, 50 leases have been signed, including clothing stores, a fitness center, and office space. About 10 more leases are in negotiations. From Pontiac, I'm Sarah Hewlett for Marketplace.
Apple's annual shareholder meeting is today, and the focus is expected to be on who should take the company over if CEO Steve Jobs steps down for good. Well, he's been on medical leave since last month, Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Shareholders are expected to vote today on a proposal that would demand Apple disclose its succession plan. Steve Jobs won't be specific about why he's on leave, but he's had at least one bout with pancreatic cancer, and there's a frenzy of speculation about his health.
No doubt the tabloid reports and the alleged pictures of him leaving a cancer clinic aren't helping.
Hilary Sale teaches corporate governance at Washington University.
I can't imagine that the board has had its head in the sand, and if it did, it should be in trouble for that.
Having a succession plan is one thing. Making it public is another. Carl Howe of the Yankee Group says that could put Apple at a competitive disadvantage.
Other companies, if they know the line of succession, then, for example, they can try to hire away people that might be in that line of succession.
Sale says the vote is non-binding, but it could send a message to the board. Shareholders want to know where the company is heading. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, Jeremy, I saw this on the website The Consumerist, which I know you know about too.
Mm-hmm.
And this story is about this cafe near Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. When TSA agents come in for a bite to eat at this restaurant, they get kicked out of the place. In some cases, escorted out, the police help, all of that. An employee says the owner of the restaurant is a frequent flyer who recognizes those individual TSA agents. He actually looks at them and remembers their faces. So when they come into his restaurant, he's really mad about the pat-downs and the full body scans and the like. So this restaurant owner has now put the TSA on his no-eat list.
Oh, that's he's gone too far. I think they should put him on the no-fly list.
This could be a war on travel.
It could. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your Wednesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.